I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. And we do not have a quorum, but we're going to start hearing bills. And luckily, Representative Huntley walked in because I just about called up the other group. So Representative Huntley. We'll move House File 82 to recommend the pass and be laid over for the Bond Committee. Possibility. You understand that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 83 is a request for state bonds to complete phase one of our new airport terminal facility in Duluth. Our airport terminal presents a number of homeland security and FAA issues, and is not well equipped to process passengers nor accommodate them once they have passed through security screening. The building was designed long before 9/11, and it really can't be adapted to the way we need to treat people in an airport. Federal dollars were received last year for the first phase of the design. As a result, the project is shovel-ready and will bid on May 7th. This will put people to work right away. I have with me Brian Ricks, the Executive Director of the Duluth Airport Authority, who will explain why the project is needed and how it will be constructed. He can also address financial relationships with funding from the FAA.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ricks.
Thank you. As Representative Huntley said, I'm Brian Ricks, Executive Director of Duluth Airport Authority. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I'd like to give you a little bit of a background on what's going on at our airport and then get into specifically the project. Our airport is a tremendous regional economic engine in our community. In fact, back about a year ago, the State Office or State Department of Employment and Economic Development did an economic analysis and indicated that our airport generates about $1.3 billion annually in economic impact and is responsible for about 4,400 jobs in the community. And I'll talk briefly about some of that as we move forward here. The airport sits on 3,100 acres. We have a 10,100-foot primary runway. It's the second longest runway in the state. The only other longer runway is the Crosswind Runway right here in Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. We have instrument approaches to all runways, and we have available property for development. Northwest Airways actually began serving Duluth in 1931, so there's a longstanding history of service, air service. Currently, Northwest flies A320s and a mix of aircraft into Duluth. A320s is 150-seat aircraft with five flights daily to Minneapolis. We also have direct service to Detroit. Allegiant Air operates four times weekly nonstop to Las Vegas with an MD-80 aircraft, which is 150-seat aircraft, along with we receive about between 30 and 40 charters between Sun Country and Extra Airways, again with aircraft ranging in the 150 to 180-seat capacity. This is a slide of the combined Northwest Delta flight map, and it really indicates that this airport gives our region service to the hundreds of options to both Detroit and Minneapolis to the United States and also worldwide destinations. This is a sample of the Allegiant Air service area map. Allegiant Air is a low-cost carrier, and they are every area that is colored on this map shows where they are drawing passengers to Duluth from. It extends west of the Midgey. It extends east to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and way up into Canada. So there's a lot of folks driving down, spending evenings, and then flying out of Duluth and then returning to Duluth when they return. Our total passengers have ranged over the last 5 years between 300 and 350,000 annual passengers. Obviously, Minneapolis is the hub airport in our region, but our passengers have actually increased 13% since 2002. We also are bringing in a tremendous amount of international traffic. This is an ad put out by our fixed base operator who services the airlines in Duluth. And they are bringing in what we call international tech stops. An international tech stop is a large corporate aircraft that is really from Europe that is destined to the West Coast, and they need a location to stop, to fuel, and to clear customs. When you look at the Great Circle distances, Duluth works out very nicely. Traditionally, a lot of this traffic has stopped in Bangor, Maine, but by stopping in Duluth, they're actually saving about an hour of flight time. They're saving an hour of crew time, an hour of time on the aircraft. We're a non-congested airport, so these airplanes are being turned very quickly. It's good service, and they like it. Every gallon of fuel that these airliners purchase, and these are examples of the types of aircraft that are dropping into Duluth now, there's a percentage of that that goes into the state airport trust fund, and so that's good for our state. We also have the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth. They employ 1,289 full and part-time employees. They are on alert 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. They have added a tremendous amount of economic development into the area, doing over $60 million over the last 5 years in construction. They also perform our aircraft rescue and fire fighting services at our facility. Cirrus Aviation, as you may be familiar with, a year ago had about 1,000 employees in Duluth. That number has dropped with the economy, but the most positive future endeavor with Cirrus is a 7-passenger jet. Cirrus is now in the former Northwest Airlines A320 maintenance facility. There are 200 people working on research and development, and that jet is currently flying, and they hope to start selling that jet product in 2011. Cirrus, to give you an example of their impact in the local Twin Forks area, they spent about $17.5 million on goods and services that went into the manufacturing of their SR-20 and SR-22 aircraft. Statewide, they purchased $41 million in goods. In addition, they had a payroll calculation of about $50 million. So again, a statewide impact with Cirrus. What's grown up with Cirrus is a number of spin-off businesses: North Star Aerospace, SCS Aircraft Interiors, Hydro Solutions. And these companies aren't only working for Cirrus, but they're working for other aircraft manufacturers across the country. Moving into our terminal project, as Representative Huntley alluded to, we've been working on this project since 2003. It's really been an issue since 9/11. We've had Homeland Security, FAA, and ADA requirement issues. We started some planning and formulation in 2003 thanks to an FAA grant, and last year we received a Phase 1 grant in the amount of $1.8 million to begin design of a new replacement terminal facility. With the airlines flying 150-seat or greater size aircraft into Duluth, we have a lot of congestion at check-in. The building is very narrow. When passengers go upstairs, typically at an airport, you go to a centralized screening location that opens up into concessions and restrooms. We do not have that capability. We have multiple screening locations located on opposite ends of the terminal, which leads to this type of congestion that you're seeing on both ends of the facility. When passengers go into the hold rooms, there's inadequate seating, there's no restrooms, there's no concessions. If individuals that are waiting here want to use a restroom, the only option is to go back out through security and then come back in again, passing through security in order to board the aircraft. With the lack of concessions, the airport authority is losing revenue without the ability to have these concessions after passing through security. We also have another issue when, as indicated in the top of this slide, when aircraft are parked at the current building, which is depicted there, the tails of those aircraft are actually exceeding or penetrating through what is supposed to be restricted airspace. Because of this, FAA is very interested in solving this issue. The plan is to move the building further south or back or to the left, and then pull the apron area back through it, so it's, the footprint would look like this. The dotted area shows the existing terminal facility. The new building actually is built in the short-term parking lot, and everything is pushed back south. The airport authority looked at a number of locations for this replacement terminal. This was the most economical site given the continued use of the main apron infrastructure that is available. The project budget is $65 million. Of that, the building is $42 million. The apron site and utilities are about $23 million. Funding commitments we have are about $39 million. Congressman Oberstar has been able to position the project very well at the FAA, who has committed up to $25 million in federal discretionary money. The Airport Authority is committing $6 million in what we call FAA entitlements. These are federal dollars that are based on a formula based on the number of passengers that run through our facility. In addition, the Airport Authority has committed about $8 million in PFC, passenger facility charge, revenue to the project. Our request, total bonding request is $16.6 million, $4.9 of that in 2009 and $11.7 in 2010. We also are looking for some dollars from the State Airports Trust Fund along with we will obtain also Federal Homeland Security and TSA money and some miscellaneous grant dollars. So that is the extent of my presentation, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Mr. Reich, is that wasn't stimulus money, or is that the regular normal FAA or the federal money?
That is the normal FAA money. I should have mentioned that this project is also on the list for federal stimulus money. For airport stimulus projects, that money will flow down through the Federal Aviation Administration, through the MnDOT Office of Aeronautics, and they have yet to announce the projects that will qualify for stimulus. This project is shovel ready. It will create in excess of 200 jobs. That's a very conservative estimate, and again, will leverage significant amounts of federal dollars. We feel it will. It is positioned well to receive some federal stimulus money, which we are supposed to hear in the next few days.
Are there questions, Mr. Wright? Ms. Bethke.
Thank you, Chairman Leader. Just a question. Will this project result in lower prices for Minnesotans if you're going to be going all the different places? I mean, it's worth it to drive 2.5 hours at a lower price on an airfare, especially if it's international. Is that going to happen or no?
Well, this project is certainly needed in order to accommodate additional air carrier operations in Duluth. The current facility just is not able to accommodate that. It puts us at a competitive disadvantage. And in addition to the air service that we have, we have had air service off and on with American Eagle Airlines, and we have some other carriers that are interested, and we're also pursuing other destinations out of Duluth. So to answer your question, the more competition that we have, I think, as consumers, we realize that competition results in lower airfares.
You have a follow-up? Or Representative Scott? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, I know that you mentioned the fuel, some of the, basically a fuel tax that a certain percentage of it comes into a fund. What other sources of non-state funding do you have going towards this project?
The other sources of non-state funding are really listed here. They are our entitlement dollars that we received from the Airport Authority passenger facility charges. Ultimately, we put back into capital projects the revenues that we receive from lease rates, such that Northwest pays landing fees, concession fees from rental car operators, all of that money that we can accommodate, on top of which covers our general operating and maintenance expenses, are dedicated back into our projects.
Okay. Representative Rayner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Brian. Two quick questions. I know one of the issues that I've run into as I've talked about the project here is thank you, that we don't need regional airports anymore, and we don't need a Duluth, and we don't need a St. Cloud, and, you know, of course, members Brian was at St. Cloud before he came up to Duluth, and just wondering what your response to that is.
My response, Mr. Chair and Representative Reinhart, is you know, I think the title of my slide was an economic engine in our community. Airports are economic engines no matter where they're located. I think you've probably heard how much of an economic impact the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport generates. And that airport is on about 3,000 acres, and it's a tremendous return. The airports in Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud, Bemidji, Brainerd, wherever they're located, they're economic engines for their communities. They create job growth. They create wealth. They are critical in order to attract and retain businesses to our community. One of the first things that businesses ask when we are showing them around the community is, what type of air service do you have? How can our employees or salespeople get out to the areas that they need to visit? So they are critical economic engines, and I think the economic impact statements that you see from these airports across the state demonstrate that.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. And Brian, if you could just touch back, I don't know what slide number it is, but on the restricted airspace, the 9/11 issue. And this is not a product of bad design of the airport. We didn't really touch on why this has become an issue, but I mean, if you could do that just for a couple of seconds.
Mr. Raker. Mr. Chair and Representative Reinhart, as with a lot of federal regulations and policy areas, restrictions become more intense over the years based on the types of operations that are occurring or the types of aircraft that are using the facilities, or to further enhance safety at airports around the country. This is something that has evolved and become more restrictive from the FAA over time, and as a result, another example that I would give you is previously there weren't on the ends of runways, FAA allowed different things to occur. They didn't, and over the years, they've become much more restrictive as far as the space that you need on the end of a runway to protect from an aircraft going off the end of the runway, such as what happened at Chicago Midway a few years ago. So these restrictions have evolved over time, and that's what we're seeing here.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Rex, welcome.
Thank you.
This gentleman was my airport supervisor at St. Cloud for a while and did a bang-up job. Now we got Bill Powell, had a great successor to him, but we miss you there, too. But I wanted to, speak to Ray. I don't know if Ray Rott or Brian, if you have the numbers, what's currently available in the Minnesota Airport Fund. I know that was raided. We didn't get that money back. It was taken the last time around. And you're requesting $7 million on this one, but I don't know that it's accumulated that much to this point. And what kind of alternatives are you looking at if that's not replenished and we don't have any monies there to
represent? I think we have fiscal. We have. You mean the Duluth Airport or State Airport Fund?
State Airport Fund.
Yeah. The fiscal analyst has that. Just looked at it. Unless you have it, Mr. Wright.
Chairman Lee, to Representative Severson, I don't have the exact number. What I can tell you is we had a number of some pretty significant dollars committed from the State Airports Fund to actually begin participating in this project starting in 2008. And at to this time, there has been no commitment from aeronautics really as a result of that fund being used to support the general fund. And so that is critical. We are that fund is generating revenue every day, and we are counting on some of those dollars to be used to support in order for us to get this this project going. How quickly that money will be funneled into the system, I don't know. We have not heard that from MnDOT Air.
President Severson, he wanted to hear that. Ms. Zuerz has it. And also, they're talking bonding money, so that wouldn't be affected by the State Airports Fund too much, because they're talking bond bill here. But anyhow, Ms. Zuerz, do you have that?
And, Chair, to that point, did you not on your slide have monies dedicated from the Airports Trust Fund?
Director Wright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, we do have dollars identified for State Airports Fund to support this project. That was identified over about a five-year period starting in 2008.
Okay. And, yeah, Mr. Chair, if we could get that number, that'd be, I think it would be relevant to not just this one, but to the next project as well.
Ms. Seward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, at the end of fiscal 2009, the budget balance is expected to be about $6.4 million. However, by fiscal 2012, the balance is expected to be at a low point of $1.7 million.
It's not very good unless we get that transferred back.
Right.
Yeah. You have another follow-up?
Just to follow up to that point, Mr. Chair, and so are those future projects that are dedicated project funding that are coming out of the airports fund, why is it going from 6 point something down to 1 point something?
Ms. Severson, you answer that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, the budget balance is based on current appropriation levels and then also the revenues that are expected to be coming into the fund. So as an example, there is the airline flight property tax was expected or is expected to be about $8.1 million in revenue for 2009. However, that drops down to $7.8 million in the out year. So it's changes in the revenue streams that are impacting that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Wright.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Wally want to testify, or are you just a backup? I was looking at him. No, he isn't here. Then, Representative Huntley, I thought I was looking at him, but it is. Do you have other testifiers?
No, this is it, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to thank you for your having a hearing on this bill.
Unless there's someone in the audience who wants to testify for or against, basically, all we're doing is laying this bill over for recommendation to the bond committee. No other testifiers or no questions? Thank you. And House File 83 will be laid over for consideration in the bond committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haas, if you want to come up, we'll take you ahead. While he's coming up, would someone take a look at the minutes and appreciate if someone moves the minutes?
I move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Mr. Representative Wooten. The minutes have been moved of March 3rd. Any questions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes of March 3rd are approved. Representative Hawes, do you?
Mr. Leader and committee members, I'm Representative Hawes. And I'm here on House File 851, which is money for the St. Cloud Regional Airport funding project and for purchasing of land. And I have with me this evening two testifiers, Dave Kleiss and Bill Toll. Dave Kleiss is a past senator and now our honorable mayor from St. Cloud and our airport director, Bill Toll. So I would have them explain their project.
Mr. Mayor, we'll have to move his bill. I was going to have Representative Severson move the bill, but he partied.
He flew out of here on an airport bill. Well, land it there.
Representative Severson, you want to move House File 851 to be recommended to pass and laid over for the bond committee?
That is my recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have that moved. And welcome to the committee. I don't know where your first testifier is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It's an honor to be here. I didn't, as a senator, have an opportunity to testify in front of the esteemed body of the House, but I do appreciate it. I constantly tried to eliminate the Senate so that you would be the only body, but...
You recognize you had some good legislators bringing you in, or you wouldn't have got in here.
We have a fine representation in central Minnesota, and I want to first start out by thanking this committee and the legislature for the past bonding we received for our St. Cloud Area Regional Airport, $2 million, which is significant. And I want to also echo, I guess, the comments that were made by Brian Reich, also from the regional aspect, the question about the regional significance. Our regional airport, as is Duluth and Rochester, the other regional airports are significant economic engines for the community. I can't think of the number of times that I've had the opportunity to talk to businesses that when we do our retention calls on businesses, but also businesses coming in, one of the first things they look at is the transportation, a multimodal transportation system in the airports is very significant. It draws not only from our immediate area, but throughout the region, and it is significant in that respect. And our airport, and I'll be turning it over to Airport Director Bill Towle, but the support regionally also, I want to comment, is this is it's not just the city of St. Cloud. It's a three county and a multiple cities that have had strong support for this airport. It is something that when you look at the regional areas, this is probably one of the items in our region that we have unanimous agreement that not only the townships that surround the airport, which oftentimes are usually the troubling issues when you have a growing airport, but we have strong support from the townships and the cities and the counties around our airport. And we also will be actually cutting a ribbon in 2 weeks, I believe, on the 18th for the Air National Guard support facility that will be opening in St. Cloud, the Black Hawk and Chinook helicopters, which is a significant part of the National Guard's mission, will be operating out of the St. Cloud, 50 jobs, permanent jobs to the area, and a large facility that will be utilized. So we will have a strong military component at that facility also. But we are also in the process, and Mr. Tell will talk about some... the airport, I can't, since I have the opportunity, I can't stress the importance of that airport fund also. We had an issue, obviously we were relying on that too for a terminal expansion, and actually we're moving forward and those dollars were not there. So we had some critical, we actually had to take that from our city's general fund and bank that on future federal aviation dollars that come in on an annual basis, which puts us in a tough spot. So that is truly a user fee, and it is truly something that we feel very strongly about. It's returned to that also. But again, my purpose here mainly is to thank this committee for the dollars that we have invested regionally in this airport, and also the commitment from a regional aspect that the airport brings to our area and to the state. This is the last bonding request that we have, and our bonding requests have been supported in the past by not only our regional, but also by the MAC. This is from the state's perspective, from the State Department, from MnDOT, is the second tier, the second airport in the state. So it is important as a reliever for the Twin Cities, which is important also. But I'll turn it over to our airport director, Bill Towle, that will explain a little bit more where we're at with the request. And again, we're requesting $2 million in bonding, and that will be matched locally with a half-cent sales tax that was voter-approved, not only in the city of St. Cloud, but all of the area cities. So it's a regional sales tax, and that's where the local match is, a 50% match on the dollars that are received in bonding.
Hey, Mayor Kleiss, one question. Wasn't there a problem as far as expansion with you had townships and three counties involved? Is that all squared away, or am I wrong on that?
No, with the expansion, we're fine. The counties are on board. The townships are on board with the, again, the dollars for free land acquisition. In fact, there's been a very strong support from the counties and the region between there in the area. So, in fact, in my in memory, even long-term memory, the airport's been very strongly supported by, it sits in Sherburne County, but it's strongly supported by Stearns County and Benton County. And it also it encompasses, well, the city of St. Cloud is where the airport is at, but the township nearby, Leesaw and Haven Township, which have been supportive of the airport. And in fact, our area planning organization, our transportation, which is made up of the counties, the townships, and the city, this is one of their top priorities. And so we have those concerns. There's strong support from all those jurisdictions.
Yes, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Towles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bill Towle. I'm the airport director at the St. Cloud Regional Airport. And I'd just like to start off, by way of background, there was a Pier 2 study that was completed at the end of 2003 by MnDOT Aeronautics. And basically what this study did was talk about air service in the state of Minnesota and how it relates as a system from the Minneapolis International Airport out. What they identified was that St. Cloud was a Tier 2 airport. Rochester and Duluth are also Tier 2 airports, which means that they're capable of handling that two or more carriers, serve a large population center, among other things. With that said, The study also identified St. Cloud as the likely reliever to the Twin Cities International Airport. Talked about its location, where the population growth is going, where the corridors are in terms of Highway 10 and I-94, but it also talked about the lack of infrastructure to handle that. And so immediately after that, it was recommended by the FAA and MnDOT Aeronautics that St. Cloud update its master plan and basically take this Tier 2 study into account and basically plan for St. Cloud being a relief airport. With that said, we came up with an ultimate airport development plan, and that's where we come up with needing this property. We may not need it tomorrow. We may not need it in 10 years, but when we do need it, this is property that needs to be acquired as soon as possible to ensure that this airport can grow and this transportation system, this Minnesota transportation system, can be completed. We really appreciate the help in the past. A couple of years ago, we received $2 million in bonding that we matched with $2 million. Currently, we're in the process of completing spending of that. We have five more parcels that we have appraisals on that will complete the acquisition of that $4 million. We also have future runway growth that we're talking about in terms of our Crosswind runway that takes some of this land into account. Some of the land that we just purchased with some bonding money recently is critically needed for the expansion of our Crosswind runway, which right now St. Cloud has one air carrier or large aircraft runway. It's 7,000 feet, and we don't have a second runway that can handle that kind of traffic. We get 737s in right now on a fairly regular basis, a couple, three times a month, Sun Country charters. We're certainly looking to try to attract additional air service to the St. Cloud Airport as well to better meet the needs of the community and the region. So ultimately, we need that second air carrier runway. If our main runway is down for any reason, maintenance, snow removal, whatnot, there's not a runway that can be used by these larger aircraft. So that's our next big project, is the Crosswind runway, and the FAA is also on board with that. Ultimately, in our airport development plan, we have a parallel runway, again, meeting the needs of this Tier 2 study, whereby St. Cloud would be the reliever airport or the second largest airport in the state of Minnesota. And again, ultimately, that would be a parallel runway. We have lots of training activity that takes place with St. Cloud State. And as our activity grows with the helicopters, the training, the charters, the air carrier aircraft, and then LifeLink, which is a helicopter outfit as well, we need to separate that traffic. And that's where we talk about the need for a parallel runway. All of that is encompassed in this plan, in this ultimate airport development plan, and that is where we need this additional 800 acres of property.
I have one question, Mr. Tall. With the airport and runway at Camp Ripley or Fort Ripley, they don't base helicopters. Do they have a permanent, is that just a facility for landing and taking up? They don't have any permanent aircraft stored there?
Mr. Chair, are you asking about whether they have permanent aircraft at Camp Ripley?
Right.
I'm not aware that they do. Most of the activity at Camp Ripley takes place from transient aircraft, mostly from St. Paul. They fly up to Camp Ripley, and then they turn around and go back to St. Paul. They'd be doing something similar from St. Cloud as well. We're going to have about a dozen aircraft based in St. Cloud. They go up to Camp Ripley. They have what's called a military operating area, which is airspace that's essentially dedicated to the military, where they can go and practice maneuvers and do some different things without having a lot of civilian-type aircraft in that area. So that's generally the way they work that up in Camp Ripley. But now they're going to be closer to that, and they certainly like, for many reasons, St. Cloud, but one of them is its central location in the state.
Mr. Charles, you don't conflict with airspace or pretty close with them, then?
Mr. Chair, no, we don't. We're actually well away from that area in terms of where our activity goes, and aircraft certainly get up to an altitude very quickly away from the St. Cloud Airport, and certainly wouldn't infringe upon that military operating area unless they were going to what's called flight service, and that would be a basically a radar type service that allows them to go through there, but they would be seen by other aircraft.
Are there any questions from the clinic? If not, Representative, are there people in the audience who want to testify for or against it? Representative Hawes, that was your total testifiers, right?
That is correct. Sure.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. And Representative Severson, you want to renew your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just like to put a pitch in as well. This is a project that's been going on, and it's been a growing economic engine for St. Cloud. It's got support, full support of all of surrounding communities. And, you know, we have kind of watched this thing as jobs have come in and we were able to get the Guard in. It's been a huge boon to the area, and I think in terms of watching how a regional airport should grow, this is a great example, and this is really essential to making sure that we put kind of a buffer zone around an airport so that we don't get the economic development that infringes, that we get another MAC going on in the St. Cloud area, because we're growing pretty fast. So this is a great bill, and I know if we don't get it this year that we need to keep it on the front burner. This should be a priority for our airports division. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 851, recommend layover for possible inclusion in the bonding bill.
Thank you, Representative Severson. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
See, nobody left except me. I'll take Hornstein, too, and I'm up there.
Well, the other issue is up there. Up there.
All right, Chair Leader, good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 846 to be recommended to pass and laid over. Yeah, laid, this is a bond bill, laid over with the bond committee.
Okay, so move.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 846 is a rail improvement bond request. The Minnesota Rail Improvement it was established in 1976 to provide monies for generally what happened, abandoned railroads. The railroads were abandoned. This way the state had some monies. If they weren't bought up by another individual, they could buy up the right-of-way, and in most cases it was sold back to shippers or individuals, or sometimes used for trails. And it started out, we gave bond monies early, and I think since 1976 there's about $35 million in bond monies, and it's a revolving fund, and it actually is up to about $100 million in revolving fund. But what happened a year ago or 2 years ago, the state used some of their monies, they call it the MRI, MRI, Minnesota Rail Improvement Program. They took some of those money, $6 million, to balance the budget. So what's happened now, their request for about $25 million in projects, and they don't have that kind of money, and they're requesting some bonding authority to reestablish some of that capability to repair railroads and help the shippers out. As we had testified testimony the other day from that one short line, that's the type of work they do, where they help to rehab a short line and the shippers participate, and it's usually a low interest loan, and it's a rare time it's a grant. And basically that's what it is. It's a bond request for about $10 million, and I have a gentleman here that is with the short line railroads, I believe, and if he could testify, Mr. Chair.
May I ask one question, Chair Leader? I understand that there's an amendment. Would you like to move your amendment now?
I did have an amendment, I'm sorry, because I don't have the bill here. Mr. Burris has an amendment. There was a problem in the, not a problem, but to clarify some of the title, and if I could ask Mr. Burris to explain it. I'd move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the amendment?
I know what, he's going to explain it to Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment makes a couple of technical changes and clarifies that the funds are for the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program and modifies the mechanics of how the funds are handled once bond proceeds are made available.
Unless there are questions, Mr. Chair, I'd move that amendment.
Any questions? All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Now would you like to go have someone testify?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dan Rickel. I'm the newly elected president of the Minnesota Regional Railroad Association, a group of 16 short line railroads that operate in the state of Minnesota. And I'm also the president of the Northern Lines Railway, which is a short line railroad in St. Cloud, Minnesota. We've got quite a St. Cloud contingent here, a multimodal city. but actually, the Northern Lines is actually one of the smallest railroads in the state. We operate about 25 miles of track, 7 employees, and serve 23 customers. So a program like this is very important to us. Today I'm here to offer my support for Chairman Luger's bill and that the support also of our membership of the Minnesota Regional Railroad Association. Since its inception 30 years ago or 3 decades ago, the program has really done a lot to benefit the short line railroads in the state of Minnesota. And with this bill and the continued funding that it provides, we'll be able to continue in that effort. There's been approximately $35 million that has been invested in the program over the years, and it's returned about $100 million in investment in railroad improvement. After the railroads were deregulated and the process started in the mid-1970s, the program was created by the legislature to help preserve rail service on lines that would otherwise have been abandoned. The MRISI program, or MRSI program, which we, Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, we lovingly refer to as the MRISI program, is actually 5 programs in one. The handout that we provided in your packet kind of goes a little bit deeper into the explanation of those programs. But the 2 most active programs are the Rail Rehabilitation Program and the Capital Improvement Program. Both of these provide interest-free loans for improvements to track and facilities along short line railroads in the state. Railroads, rail shippers in the state, and I'd like to add that the state's done an outstanding job of administering the program over the years. That under these programs, to improve old track and restore rail facilities and construct new track and construct new shipper facilities as well. The loans are generally repaid through a surcharge that's placed on each car that's hauled. And as they're repaid, then the funds become available for new projects. Some of the examples that have been funded over the years by the MRISI project, there's been a $264,000 loan to the Minnesota Commercial Railway in St. Paul, and with that they constructed 1,300 feet of new track in their yard to help alleviate some congestion issues they had. There's been a $500,000 loan to the Red River Valley and Western Railroad. With that, they added 4,300 feet of yard track in Breckenridge, and again, that's to help them handle 100 car unit trains up there to help with their congestion. There's been a $200,000 loan to United Farmers Co-op in Winthrop. With that, they added 2,300 feet of new track for shipping grain and fertilizer by rail rather than by truck. And there's been another $200,000 loan to the Rossay Farmers Elevator. With that, they put in a bulk scale that allows them to weigh shipments in and out of an ethanol plant. As you can see, it helps not only the railroads themselves, but it helps the shippers as well. But Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there's still, as Chairman Luger said, there's still a number of unfunded projects out there. There's in the packet that we provided. There's about $25 million that have already been identified of unfunded projects out there, and I'm sure that there's many more waiting in the woods and the weeds to have come forward as time goes on. Unfortunately, the balance of the MRISI account stands currently at about $3 million. Chairman Luger's bill will restore the money that was taken from the fund last year as part of the budget balancing program, and we'll also begin adding a bit more to address some of the outstanding requests that keep coming to the Minnesota Department of Transportation. So we really do I, along with our membership, encourage you to pass the bill to help restore the funds that were diverted. And just keep in mind that for every rail car that we ship, we're able to take between 3 and 4 truckloads of product off of the highway system. So there's benefit in rail service. I'm available for questions.
Any questions for Mr. Rico? Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for Mr. Rickle or for staff, this is a revolving loan fund account. Do you know how much money is currently outstanding? I mean, as long as the money hasn't been paid back yet, we couldn't get our hands on it. I know we took about $6 million out. Is there still a balance, a receivable out there that can come back into the program eventually, too, to add to this?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. I believe Ms. Sewers would have that. Do you have it, Ms. Sewers, or Mr. Burns?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I don't have that information with me, but I can get that for you.
Yeah, that would be good for us to know, too. This is a marvelous program, Mr. Chair, and does a lot of good, and particularly in rural Minnesota, where these mines serve large industry. We need to, in my humble opinion, we need to keep the industries there we have and incentivize them and enable them to do even better job. I was irritated that we had swept that money out, but of course, at the end of the day, in May, I guess, with the 11th hour, we do things like take money from airport funds and from the ports fund and from this Mercy program, and putting it back, I think, is a marvelous thing for us to do, but I'm just curious as to how much more is it in receivables that will bolster the fund in future years, too. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Hausman?
Just that, Mr. Chair, with more revenue, we wouldn't have to cut.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to follow that. I'm going to follow Representative Beard. I want to thank Representative Beard for coming out to the Minnesota Prairie Line and looking at the rail line. Representative Beard, you're absolutely right. We've heard bills now about multimodal transportation and how we're raiding those funds in order to balance the budget. And if we truly want to for some economic development, we need to restore those funds to airports, to rail, and the like. And I thank you for coming out and looking at the line.
Any other questions of the testifier?
I'd like to renew my motion that House File, 846, I think, be recommended to pass and referred to the bond committee and be laid over.
Chair Leader, I think we have another testifier.
I demanded, excuse me.
I'm sorry. Chair Leader, we have one other testifier, Bob Zielinka.
Oh, Bob Zielinka.
I won't repeat. Excuse me. My name is Bob Zielinka. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent grain elevators and feed mills here in the state of Minnesota. We have approximately 600 grain elevator locations in the state, owned by 375 companies. We permanently employ over 11,000 people. So we have been and continue to be an economic force in rural Minnesota. I had the opportunity to work at the Region 9 Development Commission in 1976, and I worked with Senator Tim Penny at that time and Representative Henry Callis, who authored this legislation. And I also had the opportunity to work on one of the first projects, the Alden to Jackson $22 million rehabilitation project. And it's been very successful. It's been very, very beneficial for hundreds of grain elevators around the state of Minnesota. Hated to see the money siphoned out, and like to see the money go back. It's an excellent program, an excellent revolving loan program, and has done a lot for our member elevators to build rail siding, to build storage, to build faster legs to handle more grain in a more efficient manner. And it's been very helpful for rural Minnesota. Elevators that are on rail generally can pay their customers about 10 cents a bushel or more than if you don't have rail. So it means a lot, the impacts carry on through the economy. So I don't want to belabor the point, but I just want to reference the fact that we have been and continue to be very supportive of this program.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against the bill that's before us? Seeing that there's no one else coming forward, if you're later, you want to renew your motion?
I do, rather than repeat it. I'd just like to indicate, usually Representative Beard would wear a scarf or one of these, you know, these tight leather helmets, but he wears one that's basically a scarf because he's a railroader. It's red, but he's also a pilot, mm-hmm. And he's got a bicycle.
Nobody's telling all my secrets.
So, to the leader, renew his motion for this, for House File Number 846 to be held over for possible inclusion in the bonding recommendation.
Aye.
So moved.
Aye.
Yep. Aye. Next one, you want to move House File Number 851?
Did I do something? Mr. Chair, it's Representative Hornstein.
I'm sorry.
Here, so he asked if I would take his bill. It's a small bill, and that one of the testifiers is here, and if I could take that bill, Mr. Chair, I would move House File 619. Do we recommend it to pass? And,
Finance Committee?
Pass staff. I don't know where it's supposed to go.
So well, that's to pass to the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee, okay.
Okay, so moved. We are looking at committee, House File Number 619, and it's been motion that it passes to the Finance Committee. Are there any amendments to this particular bill, Chair Leader?
Not that I'm aware.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
You may proceed.
House File 619 basically deals with the International Fuel Tax Agreement with the details, and I have a testifier, Ms. McCormick, I believe it's right. And she could tell you about the bill. If she isn't, I would take it over, but I think she'd do a better job.
Welcome to the committee, and tell us your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And she and the members of the committee, we're requesting this legislation because the International Tax or Fuel Tax Agreement, which we administer, allows us to collect the taxes for carriers that are registered in our state, but we also then prorate those taxes and provide funding to the other states that the carriers go through. As a result, we require an annual fuel decal for those carriers so that whatever states they're going through, they have that decal to show that they are abiding by that agreement. The fuel tax decal is $2.50, and last year there was legislation that you may remember that you passed to ensure that funding that we charge for the fee was deposited in our vehicle services operating, a special revenue operating account. But inadvertently, we did not realize that there was a rule from several years ago that referred to a 50-cent charge for that same decal that we're charging $2.50 for. So we're requesting that that rule be deleted so that there isn't a conflict in the statutes and rules, and so that any carrier that's looking to find out what the fee is isn't confused if they look up the rule versus the statute as to what fees we're charging.
All right. Any questions? Any questions from the committee? Representative Beers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, years ago in another life, among other things I did, besides scarves and goggles and hats, my brother and I owned a semi. Don't ever do that, by the way, people. And one of the things we had to do is we had a metal plate about like this that hung behind the cab and had fuel stickers from all the states we ran in. It was a real pain in the behind. And we did our own reporting and prorating. So are you here to tell me that, it's been a few years, it was a painful memory, I try not to pay attention to it, that we've done away with those and we can just do one international sticker now and pay one fee to the state and you actually take care of the proration then? Is that how this works? Am I missing something?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, you still have to get the stickers for all the states that you're traveling through, but if you don't travel through, or if you don't, we still prorate those, though, for all the states. The state of record does prorate that. Whichever carrier that you go into that state, we will ensure that the fuel taxes get paid to all the states, and we do have a fairly up-to-date system for that. It's standalone from our regular information system. So we do have a system that we use. Matter of fact, we just ended our registration period this past Friday for carriers to come in and provide us with that information so that we can ensure that the fuel taxes are paid to the correct states.
Is there a follow-up, Representative
Beard? Yeah, actually there is, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. I'm not sure I'm understanding it. So do the truckers have an option then of doing this on their own and putting their own stickers on and doing their own reporting, or do they have to work through this system?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I may not be explaining it correctly. No, they don't have the option. What they may have the option is that they can report it to any of the states that they're going through that they have a decal for, but most carriers, if they're housed and they work, operate through Minnesota, would do that in Minnesota as the state where they are operating in. So, but we have a central clearinghouse that all the money goes into, and then we have an accounting system where then we pay out the money. It's all reconciled through the IFTA organization, and then we're sure that every state's paying, and there's audits that are done so that we're sure that carriers are paying the correct fuel taxes to each state that they drive through. So we do have an audit reconciliation process.
So then thank you, Mr. Chair. The fuel tax decal, then, is that like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval? Do they have to have this, or is it something the trucks can, and is it only for Minnesota-based carriers or any truck that runs through here?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, it's for any truck that runs through our state. They can get temporary ones if they need to, but they have to have that as they are inspected as they come through the state.
Follow-up. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick. I had the interesting scenario that I had a constituent who drove down to Florida to pick up a particular automobile for their business, ended up getting slapped with a $3,600 fine by Florida. Was that because of this? I would call it a universal fuel tax agreement, which would be UFTA for short.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair and Representative Stevenson, I think it would have been from this, but there's also the IRP program where you have to be registered through as a commercial vehicle if you're going to operate within other states besides the states that the carrier's registered in. So I'm not sure, without knowing the actual situation. It could have been both. I'm not really sure.
And Ms. McCormick, I think that is the one. How much does that cost for that commercial license in Minnesota to be able to operate throughout the states?
Ms. McCormick?
Right offhand.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, I don't know offhand, but I can provide the information to the committee.
Follow
it? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick. To my recollection, it was something like $250. It was a substantial amount, and it was kind of interesting to hear from, you know, some of our operators that go throughout the states that get caught in this, and I'm not sure how he would have been aware that was in fact required other than getting a ticket once and learning for a lifetime. But
thank you,
Mr. Chair. That brings up a question. What is the charge also for other states? How does Minnesota compare with other states and what they charge on these decals?
Ms. McCormick?
No. Mr. Chair and Representative, I really can't tell you offhand. I'll have to check. I think we basically are just charging just for the decal. That's the major thing, and just the administration of that decal. So I would assume it may depend on the staffing and those kinds of things and how it's given out, but I don't know for sure. I'll have to verify that. I know we've looked at what the what we needed for a fee in order to pay for the service. So I'll just have to check, though, in terms of how it compares or if it's a standard fee. I'm not positive.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any more questions? Do you have any other testifiers, Chair Leader?
I don't have any. And Mr. Chair, no, I don't.
And ordinarily, I would ask if there's anyone in the audience that wants to testify for again. But seeing that there's no one, would you like to renew your motion for to recommend this bill to pass and return to the Finance Committee?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I renew my motion.
All in favor of the recommendation for this bill to pass and to return to the Finance Committee, could you signify by saying aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes. The motion prevails.
You're adjourned.
Oh.